What I plan to do is summarize the entire first and second chapter in brief. So the most important aspect of study of the scriptures is right understanding. I should not take out my own interpretation. It's not I think. No, it's what the Lord thinks, or what Guru thinks, or what the scriptures tell. So clear, right understanding of this knowledge is very important. And that's why, see, all the scriptures have a symbolic or an indicative meaning. And then there is the actual meaning. And sometimes the actual meaning seems very strange, like the verse we are going to do with the children today, we had covered in the second chapter, where it says, what is night for the wise person is day for us, and what is night for us is day for him. So what does that mean? If you want to know the meaning, please come to the assembly. we'll let the children explain it. So the point is that what is night for me is day for him, and what is night for him is day for me. I mean, is he a night watchman or what? I think we talked about it. So right understanding, so there is a literal, that's why you cannot study the scriptures just with a dictionary and translate it. You need a guru to interpret for you. Talking about right understanding, I have told this story about the genie making a bridge to Hawaii. How many have heard this? If you haven't heard it, good, because it's a beautiful story. So once upon a time, there was this man who was walking through Los Angeles, through Malibu Beach, and he accidentally kicked a lamp, some hard object. He pulled it out. It was an old lamp coated with dirt. So he cleaned it vigorously. And suddenly, as he was cleaning, a genie comes out. And the genie says, you know, master, I have been in this lamp for 1,000 years, and thank you for bringing me out. And as we know, there are 3 wishes I have to give, but I am an old genie. I've been there 1,000 years. I can only give you 1 wish. And that wish cannot be too difficult. It has to be easy wish, because I cannot do something. I'm 1,000 years old. So he thinks for a while and he says, you know what? I live in LA and I always wanted to go to Hawaii, but I am afraid to fly. When I even thought of a plane, it gives me, you know, shivers. So can you make a highway from Los Angeles to Hawaii? Make it for me so I can drive. So genie says, highway? You know how hard it is? I told you easy. It's 3,000 miles. I have to build highway. Then I have to put rest areas and gas stations and exits. And, how am I going to do that? It's too difficult. I can't do it. Think of something easy. So he says, okay, I understand. He says, you know what? I was married 3 times and my wives all 3 divorced me. And they said, because I don't understand them. So he says, can you teach me how I can understand women? So the genie thinks for a while and says, you know that highway? You want 2-lane or 4-lane? So... he said, that is easier than trying to understand women. So here also, we have to have the right understanding. And so far in the Bhagavad Gita, what we have studied is that Arjuna had a problem. In the first chapter, just to summarize, Arjuna asked Sri Krishna, as you can see also in the chariot, he was the charioteer and Krishna was his driver, was his chauffeur, and he asks him to take it between the 2 armies. And when he sees the Kauravas on one side and the Pandavas in front of him, he sees all these, his teacher and his grandfather and his cousins, and then he realizes there's going to be a great war, and he becomes totally confused. And how am I going to fight? And I will be killing all these people, and there will be, the whole society will collapse, there will be a wholesale slaughter and so much killing, and there will be so much sorrow, and women will be widowed and children will be orphaned, and why just for a piece of land? But the Bhagavad Gita is not only for Arjuna fighting the battle, it is for every one of us, because each and every one of us is engaged in this world in a situations where we face everyday different problems. It's not that we have to take a gun and fight or we have to take a sword, but in life, everybody is facing some problem or the other. Actually, Robin Williams, I heard a very beautiful quotation. He says, whoever you meet is facing a personal conflict, a battle that you know nothing about. So be kind. Because everybody you meet has some conflict or the other, some problem. So it's better to be kind than to be right. It's a very, very beautiful quotation that everybody has. It's nobody that whose life is free of problems. So better be kind to everybody. So this story is not only about the Pandavas and Kauravas. It's not only about Arjuna's grief, but it is for all of us. That's why this is the message from Bhagavad Gita, even though Krishna tells Arjuna that he has to fight. But that was the situational. At that time, Arjuna was faced with a situation where he was not doing his duty. He was facing the evil people on the other side. And if he did not perform his duty, then he was failing in his duty. So Krishna tells him, at this time, your duty is to fight. But Gita is not telling all of us to fight, because we are not facing any war. But what Gita is telling us, that how in life there will be conflicts, there will be difficulties, there will be problems, how this knowledge of Gita can better equip us to face life's adversities. That's what Arjuna, by the 18th chapter, his mind was cleared, everything was cleared. Now, Bhagwan could have, because he was God, he could have just waved his hand and removed all the Kauravas. He had that ability, but he didn't. He spent 700 shlokas explaining to Arjuna why he should do what he should do, why what he's doing is wrong. Because he said, if I remove his problem, he's not going to learn. He's like a mother. Suppose she every night does, I know one mother who every night used to do her child's homework because the child was maybe not that, was a little lazy and careless. And ultimately, he somehow passed, but when he went to college, he was a total failure because his mother was not with him. He was in a different state and he was never used to doing things for himself because his mother had always been doing his homework, helping him pass. So similarly, the teacher gives us the ability to face life, does not solve our problems for us, teaches us how to solve, just as a true mother would tell the child, okay, you try to solve. If you can't, I can help you. And then next time you'll do it on your own. So similarly, this knowledge is meant for us to pass in the exam of life. Because we all have to pass, and ultimately the reward of passage is becoming Brahman. So that is the final graduation, and so that is why this knowledge is given to us. Similarly, in Srimad Bhagavat, Parikshit Maharaj approaches the Guru, and the Guru does not solve his problem, tells him 18,000 verses over 7 days. How many people know the story of Parikshit Maharaj? One, it's a most beautiful story. I'll tell it today now that it has come up. Maybe then we'll introduce the Gita next week. It's a very beautiful story. So Parikshit was the son of Abhimanyu, the grandson of Arjuna. Very, very evolved, you know, parents. Abhimanyu was a great soul, and his grandfather Arjuna, of course, was a very great soul. And he belonged to this lineage. And when he became king, the country was in a mess. There was so much violence and corruption and evil and wrong things happening and bad things happening. And he straightens out the whole country. He made it, you know, everything very clean and very comfortable and very nice. And the evil people were either, you know, taught or they were, you know, eradicated and goodness. And the whole country became very peaceful. He was a very good king, wonderful. And the whole world, the whole nation loved him because he was so good. So it so happened that one day he was out hunting. And as he was hunting, he got separated from his soldiers. And he was on his alone chasing some boar or something, wild boar. And kings used to do that, and he got lost. And he was very hungry, he was very thirsty. You know, the soldiers who were carrying the food and water were somewhere far away. And so he comes to this ashram of this rishi, Samika Rishi, who was a sage sitting in deep meditation. Deep, he was lost, and this king shows up there and, you know, makes a little noise. And the rishi doesn't hear him at all. And even great souls sometimes get deluded. And so he gets angry, you know. Look, I am the king of this country and this person is totally ignoring me. He gets so angry. There was a dead snake lying. He took it and put it around that sage in meditation, which is the worst thing you can do, you know, to insult a great sage. But at that time he was hot, he was thirsty, he was hungry, he was angry. So he put that snake and walked away. As he walked away, the sage's son came, who was also a very evolved sage himself, had done a lot of meditation, a lot of tapas. And he said, my father has a snake around, dead snake. Who did that? He takes off the snake and he picks up water and throws it on the ground. And he says, whoever has done this in 7 days will be bitten by a horrible snake, the takshak, and will die a horrible death because he has put this on my father. And a great sage, once they give a curse, what they call shrap, it has to come true. So in the meantime, the Samika Rishi, the father, wakes up and he sees his son and he says, what are you doing? He says, father, somebody had put this snake around you and I cursed him. He'll be dead in 7 days. He'll be bit by a snake. And that rishi, with his vision, he knew. He said, you know what, whom you have cursed? You have cursed Maharaja Parikshit. He knew that who had, even though he was in meditation, he could go back in time and see with his divya drishti. He said, the one you have cursed is one of the best kings we have ever had in history. Before you do something, you should think. You know, whom are you cursing? That's what they say. Before you take action, think through it, what you're doing. Don't just get angry. In anger, sometimes we... So the teaching of the father to the son is so beautiful that the way, if you read it in detail, he says, you know, in life, things will come. We don't get angry and just do things without thinking. You should have thought through. You should have found out who it was and why he did it. What was the reasoning? You don't just said, father, I can't take the curse back anymore. No, you can't once you have done it. And it will happen in 7 days. There is no choice. So then Samika Rishi sends one of his disciples. He says, go and tell Raja Parikshit that in 7 days this is going to happen. And so he goes and tells Parikshit. Now Parikshit was very evolved. So he took the news very calmly. He said, 7 days I'm going to be dead? He said, yeah. He said, I deserve it. That sage, that great rishi, I insulted him by putting that snake. I totally deserve to die. I have no... But what am I going to do for 7 days? See, suppose we are told you're going to be dead in 7 days. What will you do? You know, he could have spent in enjoying going to Hawaii or going to the beach or having fun. He said, I have only 7 days. I need to know the truth. So he goes to Shukdev Muni, who was the great sage at that time, and he goes and sits at his feet and he says, Maharaj, I have only 7 days to live. And he doesn't make a fortress so that the snake cannot get in and put all kind of guards and, you know, like a big, you know, nothing. He says, snake is going to come, it's fine. But I have only 7 days left, please teach me. So he sits with his guru for 7 days. And 18,000 verses of teaching. That's why Srimad Bhagavat is, that's why they call it Srimad. That's the difference between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavat. See, sometimes people confuse it. Bhagavad Gita is this 18 chapter, 700 verses. Srimad Bhagavat, Bhagavat and Bhagavat is different, is 18,000 verses of stories about the Lord, also having the highest knowledge, but has a lot more teaching in it. So, 7 days he stays with his teacher, he learns a knowledge, and at the seventh day he just sits down in meditation because he knows the snake is coming now. Goes into meditation, snake bites him, snake appears, bites him, and he gives up his body. So that was the greatness of this great soul who cheerfully gave up his body, and his only goal was the highest knowledge, which he got from his guru. He said, I got what I came for. in 7 days he achieved, mainly because he had done so much good. See, otherwise in 7 days to realize is not easy, but he already had the background of doing goodness. So doing that, he reached the highest knowledge. So we have a few minutes, so I'll just continue about the first chapter and maybe just do the introduction today. So Arjuna had three problems at the end of the first chapter where he was confused about my duty. He had shoka, bhaya and moha. Shoka is sorrow. Sorrow is always what? About the past. Right? Something bad happened to me. That's why I am sorrowful. Oh, something bad happened and that's why now I'm sick and I'm, you know, this infection I got or this, you know, some bad thing happened because of which I'm suffering. So shoka is about the past and bhaya or fear is about the future. I don't know what will happen tomorrow. I don't know what will happen next year. You know, I'm going old, getting old now. I don't know what will happen. So the fear is of the future. Shoka is of the past. Fear is, bhaya is of the future. And moha is delusion in the now. Right now I am confused. So all three he was suffering from. He said, you know, I know from my experience that war is terrible. And then I don't know what will happen after the war, what problems. And so he was deluded. So he basically forgot his duty. So the teacher's job is to remind us that, yes, there was problems in the past. There will be problems in the future. But if you make your now good, that's why we say, no, live in the now. The power of now. There's so many books about living in the present. In the Mananam series also, we have a beautiful book called Living in the Present. I think they ran out, but if you're interested, you can let the office know, let Harsha Ben know. She'll order it for you. Beautiful book, Living in the Present. Every chapter is so beautiful. So what Krishna teaches him that you need to improve your behavior now so that your future will be good. And so what he did was remove this moha, this delusion, this ignorance. And how does he remove it? It's very interesting. Usually a teacher starts with level 1, then level 2, then level 3, then level 12. But Krishna starts with level 12. He says, you are that Atma. You are that consciousness. He says, nahanyati, nahanyate. He says, you are that consciousness. Nahante hanyamane sharira. He says, this body will perish. All these kings you see, all the soldiers you see, lot of them will not survive this war. But all of them are that Atma, that consciousness. You know, avikari, that is all-pervading, that is unchanging, and all of us are that. So even if the body perishes, this Atma, this consciousness does not perish, and that is you, and that is all these kings you are seeing. Whatever you are seeing, they are all that one consciousness. Avinashi tu tad viddi yena sarvam idam tatam. That consciousness which is indestructible is pervading. They're all of them are that. Even if their body perishes, they don't perish. Even if your body perishes, Arjuna, if you don't survive the war, you won't perish, your body will perish. So he teaches him the highest knowledge. And like, you know, beginner, Arjuna sounds confused. I am that, you know, suddenly you tell him that. So he looks a little confused. So then Bhagwan has, you know, compassion on him. And he says, Esha te, you know, this, I have told you this highest knowledge. Now buddhi yogam imam shrunu. He says, now having given you this highest knowledge, I realize that you are not ready for that. So listen to karma yoga. So Bhagavan himself, seeing the confusion, even though Arjuna had previously studied the scriptures, but he was not ready for this highest knowledge. So he says, that's okay. Esha te bihite sankhya buddhi yoga imam shrunu. He says, so far I have taught you the sankhya yoga, the highest knowledge, but now I'm going to teach you karma yoga. And what is karma yoga, which we will be studying in detail next, starting next week, is how to work in the world without I and my. Work unselfishly, serve the world, face adversities, joys and sorrows will come, how to face the world, cheerfully work, and through working with karma yoga, that's why in the second chapter there is the most famous verse, karmanyavadika raste ma phaleshu kadachan ma karma phal hetur buhu mate sangostva karmani. So he says, your duty is to do what is right and do not worry about the result, because the result will take care of itself. If you do the right thing while you are working, concentrate on the work, do not worry about the result, have the goal in mind, but while working, I am working at this moment in this job, and then let the result, depending on the action, will take care of itself. So working with, and then at the same time, do not run away. See, ma karma phala hetur buhu mate sangostva karmani. Because Arjuna wanted to run away and he wanted to go to the forest and meditate. He says, you are not ready for meditation, so don't run away from your duties. And doing this kind of activity, where I am dedicating my activities to God, working for Him, then it purifies the mind. It reduces my vasanas, my selfishness. So that's what even Saint Francis says, you know, where there is anger, substitute love, where there is hatred, you know, compassion, where there is selfishness, sharing. So similarly, as I do karma yoga, my mind slowly becomes purer. It becomes more humble, more compassionate, more loving. And then I realize that there are two entities. One is the Atma, the consciousness, which is a non-doer. That's why they say the substratum of this universe, the Brahman, the consciousness, does not do anything. In the presence of Brahman, everything happens. Just as electricity does not do anything. Electricity is just running through the wires. But when you connect the plug to the electricity, then the light comes on, or the fan starts working, or the air conditioning works, or the sound system works. So electricity itself is neither heats, nor cools, nor runs the fan, nor runs the air conditioner, nothing. Electricity is just there as power. But when you connect to that, depending on the kind of equipment you connect, if you connect a heater, you will get hot air. If you connect a cooler, you will get cool air. If you connect a fan, it will rotate. So electricity is a non-doer, but depending on the equipment, that's how the function will happen. So we are also like the fan, or like the light, or like this body, mind and intellect is the equipment. When it is connected to Om, the consciousness, in the presence of consciousness, we are able to function. But the consciousness, Brahman itself, does not do anything, just provides the energy in which we all function. So now there is a big gap. I am a doer. You know, I do things and the Brahman doesn't do anything. I am temporary. I'm only going to be here 60, 70, 80 years. Brahman is eternal. When I do, then I enjoy or I suffer the results. Brahman is neither doer nor enjoyer nor sufferer. So there is a big gap. Oh, that God is so almighty and I am so useless. All those things we compare. How can I be Brahman? You know, I cannot be. Maybe Swami Chinmayananda, or maybe Jesus, or maybe Buddha, or maybe Guru Nanak, but not me. I can never be. So there is a gap between what I think myself to be and what the scriptures say. They say you are not a limited being. You are that great reality appearing in this world and having a name, Carrie or Satish or Barbara, and you are a male or female, but actually you all are that reality in this human form, just as that reality can be in the form of a dog or in the cat or a bird or a fish or a tree. So similarly, it is in the human form. So there is a big gap between what I think and what the scriptures tell. So how do we overcome the gap? Become a servant of God. They say, God, you are the doer, you have given me, and I am your servant. So then what happens is at least that I ego becomes less. So that is how you overcome this gap. Right away to think I am that is very difficult. And I mean, you may hear it here in the Gita, but to start living that, which these great saints could do, is difficult. So start by saying, I am a servant of God. God is working through me. God is speaking through me. God is doing. So then slowly your ego becomes less and God comes more and more in your life. That's what they say. The more you remember God, the more he shines through your life. So become a servant of God. And then slowly this gap becomes less and less, because God becomes more and more and I become less and less. So that is called moksha. I heard a very, very beautiful description of moksha. You know, Mahavirji, you know, Saint Mahavir, who started the Jain faith. So somebody asked him, what is the difference between moksha and death? You know, they both seem to be the same. Person dies or person gets moksha. What is the difference? I don't understand. So he explained it very beautifully. He said, when desires are still there, but the breath has ended. When desires are still present, but my breath is gone, that is death. I still have so many things I wanted to get and I wanted to acquire and I couldn't. And I breathe my last. So that is death. When desires are still there, but breath has stopped. But when desires have ended and breath is still there, that is moksha. So while living, I have gone to the state of desirelessness. So that is moksha. So moksha is not something that after you die somewhere in heaven, some God will give you. It is reaching that state of actionlessness, desirelessness, here and now itself. So that is the source of Arjuna's confusion. Because Arjuna had heard the second chapter, like we all have, but he had misunderstood, and that's where Arjuna's question starts. So I'll talk about Arjuna's question and Arjuna's confusion next week, but so far I think I have been able to summarize the second chapter. And the second chapter ends with description of the man of wisdom, who, having practiced this karma yoga and studied this knowledge, how does this person function in the world? How does he deal with situations? So that is the whole second chapter. We have a few minutes. Anybody has any questions relating to this or anything else? Because I don't want to start Arjuna's question or anything now. I will just do it next week. Because the third chapter starts with, yes?
We each have some of that consciousness in us. Is my consciousness separate from another person's consciousness, or is this one consciousness?
So that's a very good question. It is one. It is unbroken. It's not that consciousness is divided in her, him, you, everybody. That's one consciousness is also there in the tree. It is one consciousness which is supporting this whole universe, and each and every one of us are just an expression of that. So there is only one. There's a difference between the soul and the consciousness. The soul is the mind, intellect, the subtle body, which at the time of death, when the body perishes, this individual soul, which is me or which is called John or Satish, is the one that then leaves the body and then goes to heaven or hell and then takes up another body. Now that is sometimes also called. So the concept of soul is that which transmigrates and that which never changes. Yeah, go ahead.
Because the Catholic faith teaches that Jesus, with his sacrifice, could save all mankind because all mankind is one thing.
Right.
The consciousness of mankind. And what I was wondering isn't this planet a planet of consciousness?
Yes.
It's one thing.
Right. There's one consciousness, but the mind and intellect is separate. Your mind and intellect is separate from his, is separate from Jesus, is separate from Buddha's. So the mind and intellect being separate and the vasanas, the desires being separate, so we appear to be separate. So when Jesus, when they say Jesus saves, what they mean is if you follow Jesus' teachings to the T, follow it 100%, totally, as he said, not how people misinterpret. And that is the problem with these prophets, whether it's in Hinduism or whether it is in Islam or whether it is in Christianity. The prophets knew what they were talking about, the original founders or the original teachers. But then people misrepresent, misunderstand, or use their teachings for their own power, for their own glory. And it happens in all faiths. It's not only in Catholic, it happens in Islam, it happens in Hinduism. So it's a misunderstanding and misrepresentation. And a lot of times the fault is of the people who claim to be the teachers.
Yeah.
And they misteach, yes.
Well, I was pursuing this week the meaning of the word obedience. And the way it was explained to me and the way I interpreted it, it's like a state of mind in which your thoughts or your actions are worthy of God.
Right.
Isn't our choice here to be part of the big consciousness or not?
Yes. That's why humans have been given the freedom to choose. See, humans have been given an intellect which is called a discriminating, which decides what is right, what is wrong, what is real, what is unreal, what is temporary, what is permanent, what is good, what is bad. And so the intellect of man gives us the ability. A dog does not have the ability to choose, or a lion does not have the ability to say, from tomorrow I'm going to become a peaceful lion and not eat any animals, I'm going to eat grass. It's not going to happen because the lion does not have the intellect. You and I do. And so it is up to us whether to choose the path of Jesus or to choose. That's why they say there is God and there is Satan. It's just a representation of the good and the evil in all of us. So we have the choice. I think we need to end now. Just a couple of announcements. Satish Bhai is having a meeting of all the fathers because the Mother's Day is in 2 weeks and they will be cooking. The fathers will be cooking. And the mothers and children will eat. So there is a meeting right after the Aarti at 12:30.
Yes,
in the assembly hall. So please. Other suggestion would be if they want to pick up their lunch and sit in the kitchen. You know, it's up to you. I don't know how long.
Whatever you
decide. Yes. But there is a meeting right after the Aarti in the hall. Talk to Satish Bhai, all the fathers. So they can all participate and help in cooking lunch. And then we have some upcoming speakers, June 5, 6th and 7th. We have Swami Chidatmananda Ji. So that will be announced in the hall. And the classes will have only 3 more classes. Actually, the next class will be a full class. And then on the 13th will be a half class because we are doing Mother's Day and, you know, Gurudev Jayanti. And then the 20th will be graduation. So the Gita classes for the summer will be ending for now. And then I'll think about whether to have them in the summer or not. I'm not sure yet. But for now, we have one full class next week and then a half class after that. So we can end. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramaya Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhav. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Guru Bhyo Harihi.